It's Encounter on the Voice of America. Encounter on the Voice of America brings together advocates and opponents debating the critical issues of our time in a freewheeling, no-holds-barred discussion of fact and opinion. With today's guests and the topic for Encounter, here is Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, the politics of war and who will control the Senate after the upcoming U.S. midterm congressional elections. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Last week, just before they head out to campaign for the midterm elections, members of Congress took a vote on whether or not to authorize funding to the tune of $500 million to train and equip about 5,000 moderate Syrian rebels to help the United States degrade and destroy ISIL, also known as the Islamic State. Both chambers, the Senate and the House of Representatives, voted in favor of the Obama administration's proposal. However, there were interesting divisions within both the Republican and Democratic parties, which we will discuss on the program. We will also preview the November midterm elections. The entire House of Representatives, all 535 seats, is up for re-election, and one-third of the Senate. Currently, Republicans possess a majority of seats in the House of Representatives, and most analysts predict that it will remain in Republican hands after the election. On the other hand, political analysts say that the upper chamber, or the Senate, which is currently controlled by the Democrats, is vulnerable and may, depending on the outcome of a couple of key races, go Republican. According to the Washington Post, Republicans need to win a net of 6 seats to take control of the Senate. With approximately 7 weeks until Election Day, both parties agree that Republicans will gain at least 3 seats. They have opportunities to pick up the final 3 seats in at least 8 states. Even though President Obama's low approval ratings are creating a drag on almost all the truly competitive races, Democrats are relying on the performance of their candidates and the advantage they have on so-called pocketbook and women's health issues to withstand strong challenges from Republicans. The debate over these issues is especially pronounced in so-called swing states that Obama has carried, such as Iowa. And speaking of Iowa, guess who was at the final annual steak fry dinner by outgoing Democratic senator and liberal icon Tom Harkin? You guessed it, Hillary Clinton. She teased the crowd that she was considering a run for the presidency, but that she was mostly there for the steak and to bid farewell to longtime friend and 40-year veteran of the Senate, Tom Harkin. Being in Iowa must have been somewhat bittersweet for former Senator and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. When running for the Democratic nomination in 2008, she came in third place in the Iowa caucuses behind then-candidate Barack Obama and John Edwards. With us to discuss Congress's role in the fight against ISIL, or the Islamic State, as well as to preview midterm elections, are two veteran political analysts and valued commentators at these VOA microphones. John Fortier is a political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. He's also a regular columnist for Politico newspaper. And Igor Volsky, he's managing editor of thinkprogress.org. That's a progressive political blog affiliated with the Center for American Progress. That's a Washington-based think tank. Both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
And John Fortier, let's begin with you. John, before we get into who's up and who's down in the midterm elections, let's talk about this vote the Congress just took to authorize aid to Syrian rebels in fighting the Islamic State, or we call it also ISIL. Talk about the politics of that and the mood of the country in terms of becoming perhaps a little more amenable to, you know, U.S. airstrikes, less averse to getting involved in these kinds of things, as well as, of course, the members of Congress.
Well, it's a politics that we have not been used to seeing recently. It was an interesting coalition of both Republicans and Democrats who've come together to support the president. The president's numbers are down very significantly in foreign policy matters. Obviously, lots of things have been going on around in the world. They haven't been going so well. And he faces some pressures, both from his own party, and there's some divide in the other party. His own party, there's certainly some who were happy with the course that he was able to steer us out of Iraq and Afghanistan and look to his early promise in the campaign against Hillary Clinton that he was really going to get us out of those conflicts. And they're worried that this may be a step back in and not wanting to go too far. On the other hand, on the Republican side, there's, of course, natural criticism. Republicans are almost making on every issue of the president. But also there's some who say, you know, the president really isn't going far enough. There isn't a plan. And some of those critics still voted for the president, think it's the right thing to do something, but have been very harsh rhetorical critics of the president for really laying out something that they don't think is enough. At the end of the day, you saw enough Republicans and Democrats coming together, some of them for establishment or leadership reasons, not wanting to put down the president or saying we would vote for it even if we think it's not enough or it's a little too much. So it's a strange coalition of both parties coming together, but both parties had significant members of their coalitions who ended up voting against it.
Turning to Igor, a very good analysis by John with respect to the coalition, both on the Republican and Democratic side. Basically, Republicans are worried, some of them, that Obama's plans are too limited. Of course, they're going to vote anyway. They voted for the support to the Syrian rebels. And then the Democrats skittish about going back to war, so to speak. How do you see this vote and the impact on Obama and the political landscape?
Well, there is that rare moment of unity that we're seeing, at least voting for this limited authorization to help the moderate forces in Syria only through December 11th. They're going to have to come back and perhaps do something longer down the road. But I think the criticism is really, in some cases, coming from a minority in the Republican Party, people like John McCain, Senator Lindsey Graham, who feel that the president didn't leave the option, for instance, of putting boots on the ground, didn't do something earlier, isn't as aggressive against the Assad regime in Syria, for instance. And so there's kind of criticism to be had, certainly. But I think on the broad strokes of the policy, the airstrikes, the arming of certain moderate forces within Syria to so much as they can be even identified, to the training of the Iraqi army, and to leaving the door open to some kind of American role, some kind of support in helping these forces beat back ISIL or the Islamic State, there's a certain amount of unity. And I think certainly going into 2014, and now that these lawmakers are on their way back home, they wanted to put this issue behind them, so to speak, and focus on the pocketbook economic issues that their elections are going to be decided on.
Sure, they want to put this behind them, but as you said, Igor Volsky, they're going to be coming back for what we call a lame duck session. And at that session, John Forty, will there be a debate over the broader use of force? That is, will the Congress want to have a vote on a broader authorization for military action beyond this limited funding for the Syrian rebels?
Well, I think we well may see some debate like this in the lame duck. You do have the president, I think, threading the needle, and threading the needle in a way that reflects public opinion, between public opinion really seeing ISIL as a threat and worried about terrorism in a way that they weren't worried about 3 or 4 months ago, but on the other hand, still having a kind of war weariness and not wanting to go in fully. So you have both of those sides of the debate to negotiate. And of course, the president, by putting something somewhat limited on the table, probably is going to have a larger debate. It's a little hard to tell with the election coming up. We do expect Republicans are going to gain seats, whatever the exact result. They're probably going to be coming into that with some optimism in their direction. So that may color the debate as well. But I expect this is not the last time we will see this issue before the Congress. We will see it relatively soon again.
Igor Volsky, Democrats in particular are eager for a broader debate. Perhaps some of them reluctantly voted for the funding of the rebels, this limited action. But I think they want to come back, some of them, in November and December, to talk about a resolution authorizing force, even if the president isn't actually asking for it.
Well, yes, many Democrats in the Senate say, hey, listen, the authority you're relying on to expand the airstrikes into Syria, for instance, is old authority from 2001, from the days of George W. Bush, that you yourself, Mr. President, had criticized in the past, had wanted to change just months earlier, and now you're relying on this legal justification. Let's have another congressional debate, because this is a campaign that the president himself admits could go on for the next 3-4 years. Other analysts are saying up to a decade. So you have to, I think, have a real conversation about what's America's role, what's the role of American troops, and do we as a country want to go back into a region where we have a very storied history and one that shows that American intervention only destabilizes that region further. The White House certainly says that America's not going to bear the burden, that they're going to have a large global coalition of partners in Arab states, who are going to lead this effort. But that's, I think, something that Congress is going to have to ensure happens through a real debate and through a real authorization.
Very interesting. Well, John Forty, some Republicans, such as Lindsey Graham and perhaps even Senator John McCain, are calling for possible boots on the ground, something that Obama never misses an opportunity to say he is not asking for and will not approve.
I think you're right. Again, the president is trying to find the pulse of public opinion, which is for stronger action. But moving to boots on the ground is something that many Republicans support, but probably doesn't have broad support across the political spectrum. I think the question is how events will intervene here. If the president, the way he sketched out his strategy, could have his way, it would be something of a containment strategy, being able to work together to take some serious action, but probably it would be a festering problem. If that is not enough, as many Republicans are calling for, then the president will be called upon to do more. And so whether that's boots on the ground and he says he doesn't want them or some stronger action, very much events on the ground could dictate the need for stronger action. So I think that's what he has to watch more than the political debate. If events on the ground are not going his way, he's the commander in chief and has laid out some strategy. He'll have to defend a new strategy if he's looking to combat a bigger threat.
You're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are John Fortier. He's political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Igor Volsky, managing editor of thinkprogress.org at the Center for American Progress. We're talking about the U.S. political landscape as members of Congress begin campaigning in earnest for the November 2014 midterm elections. This is a reminder that you can listen to Encounter online as a podcast. Please visit our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA. Here's a shout out to our loyal listener, Alpha, from Mbujimayi Town in Congo, Kinshasa. Thanks for listening, Alpha. And if you want to hear your name on the show, please send us an email at encounter@voanews.com or like us on Facebook. Well, Igor Volsky, before we get into the midterms, quickly to you, in addition to perhaps more discussion on authorization for a broader military force, what other issues do you anticipate being taken up in the so-called lame duck session when members come back from campaigning?
Well, certainly you're going to have to figure out how you're going to fund the government. This current authorization goes through December 11th, and it's something they're going to have to talk about again in the lame duck session. And then, of course, the president had made a promise to his constituency that he's going to do something on immigration reform. This is executive action that he's promised that many Republicans have expressed a great opposition to. And he was supposed to do it before the end of the summer. He was supposed to extend the reprieve that certain immigrants who were brought here illegally as children received from deportation. He was going to extend that in all likelihood to their parents and maybe combine that with some other changes in work visas and so on. But he decided not to, partly because of the midterm election, partly because of how that would play in places like Arkansas and New Hampshire, where there aren't a lot of Latino voters, but where the Democratic voters are white, working class, and generally oppose such a policy. And Democrats are vulnerable in those states. And Obama, I think, to some measure, decided that he's going to hold off. And so he said he's going to do it before the end of the year. That's going to be in the lame duck session. And if Republicans take a lot of seats, maybe take back the Senate, maybe gain on their majority in the House, it's going to be difficult for him to politically go through with this, but it's something that the Latino community, who are very active on this issue, he gets heckled at a lot of public events, so does Hillary for that matter, are going to hold him accountable to. So I expect to see that politics stir up again.
And you think that he would take executive action then if...
Well, he has promised to time and time again. Right. If he doesn't, I think there's going to be a lot of disappointment.
Okay. How about you, John Fortier? What are the issues besides the perhaps a broader debate on U.S. military action?
I agree with Igor. I mean, obviously, we have the continuing set of debates on the budget and ultimately debt ceiling. So we have these conflicts that are set to happen regularly. And immigration, I think, will be a firestorm. I think Igor has laid it out quite well that the president has supporters who will want it, and the Republicans will be coming in with more momentum behind them. And so it will cause some consternation, I think, but it's likely that we won't see much in the name of immigration reform as legislation in the light of that, as well as the earlier failures in that. So I think that's going to be difficult the last 2 years. This is not for the lame duck, but I guess I would look ahead to the last 2 years. It's hard to see sometimes where you find compromise between the two parties. But occasionally it has happened in the second term, one issue, and perhaps on some issues like tax reform, where Republicans and Democrats, and there's certainly some sense that our corporate tax rate especially, but more broadly, some tax reform might be something that two parties could do together. I'm trying to be optimistic because there should be something we could come to agreement on. But I think the early atmosphere is likely to be, you know, relatively poisonous. You know, we're going to have to see if there's time in the spring and part of next year to do something together.
Before I turn back to Igor, John Fortier, let's take a look at the elections. On what issues or topics will they turn, in your view? And will incumbents benefit, newcomers? How do you expect the turnout to be? Which demographic groups are energized or are not?
Well, I think there are a lot of issues that are perennial issues between the parties that will be brought up. I think when you look at the midterm elections, you think of several factors. One, the president is not technically on the ballot, but midterm elections often are a reaction against the president. First of all, they tend to go against the president almost no matter what is happening. The out party wins a little bit. If things are going well for the president, they win a few seats. If things are going badly for the president, the opposition party wins many seats. The president is at 40, 42% of job approval rating. That's not great. It's not as bad as George Bush was at the end of his presidency, but it's certainly not a good number for him. So the fact that midterms go against the incumbent president, midterms are also a little bit more of a Republican electorate. They're a smaller electorate, more Republican-looking voters. And the fact the president isn't doing so well, I think, means the tide is in the Republican direction to some extent. You laid out some questions as to how much they will gain, whether they'll get the Senate. We can talk about that, but
yes.
I do think that it's likely to go in the Republican direction. Almost everyone agrees that Republicans will gain a number of seats in the Senate and come quite close. I personally think they will take the majority, but
in the Senate, but
a range of 5 seats where they would fall just short of taking the majority to 8 seats if things really went their way is probably the range, and you know, more likely a very narrow majority for either party, but I would say probably a narrow majority for Republicans is the most likely. The House, as you said, is already Republican, likely to be a little bit more Republican. Not many seats really available to take, but Republicans likely to take 5, maybe up to 10 seats if things were to go well for them.
So, Igor Volsky, would you agree that the midterms are going to mostly benefit Republicans, both in the House of Representatives and in the Senate as well? And what other issues will be prominent for voters?
It looks like Republicans will benefit, but I don't expect to see a great Republican sweep. I think many expected places like Arkansas or New Hampshire or North Carolina even, those Senate seats were vulnerable Democrats for Republicans to be running stronger than they currently are. And so certainly anything can happen between now and Election Day, but it looks like it won't be a sweeping victory for Republicans. But the president is in a very hard position. He's down in the numbers, as John pointed out. And even as the economy is growing, as health care reform is bringing health care to places like Kentucky, for instance, which has been very successful in implementing Obamacare, places like Arkansas, which saw the biggest uninsurance drop as a result of the law, you don't have, in great numbers, people connecting those policy successes to the president or to Democrats. And so they are not yet benefiting from some of those investments that the president made in terms of policy and politically in trying to get Obamacare to become the law of the land. So, you know, that issue has kind of faded from the headlines as we've seen a surge of concern about foreign policy. And so that's an area, I think, where Democrats could have benefited if things looked a little differently. Of course, you always have your economic issues. Democrats are trying to highlight income inequality, the pay gap between men and women. They believe that they're, as you point out, are on the right side of those issues. But it's unclear, I think, now when you look at the polls, that those messages are really resonating with voters.
And Igor, I've been reading that some demographic groups that normally vote more Democratic or in favor of Obama, such as women and Hispanics, and the young people, their numbers are also dwindling. They are also becoming more and more disenchanted, and that's hurting President Obama and perhaps the Democrats writ large.
Look, it's a midterm election. You don't really have a great turnout for Hispanics or young people, for that matter, as you do when it's a presidential run. So some of that is natural. But yes, I think it's accurate to say that some of those traditional Obama constituents, African Americans, young people, women, are not going to be as eager to go to the polls this time around.
John Fortier, let's go back to the Senate. You predict that it may very well turn Republican. Right now, the Democrats are in control by a slim majority. So let's assume, for argument's sake, that Republicans do gain enough seats to gain control of the Senate. Talk about, for our audience, what difference that makes. What are the consequences of the Senate going Republican? What is the ability of it to either support or actually thwart President Obama's agenda should it fall into Republican hands?
Well, I think in the big picture, it doesn't make that much of a difference. We already have divided government. We have a House of Representatives who is not inclined to pass legislation that the president will sign. So we're already at loggerheads between the parties. It certainly will give Republicans greater strength, greater ability to make some actions. They could make it hard on the president to get some of his nominations through. They don't have to approve them. They could do more investigation through committees, which they already do in the House. They'll have the power of being in control of committees. If they were able to pass certain legislation through the House and the Senate, which still has supermajority rule, so it's not a guarantee, they might be able to put some legislation in front of the president and force him to veto it. They might make some of the confrontations more stark. But ultimately, we are in a period where we have big differences between the parties, divided government, a lame duck president. I think we're going to see similar trends that we've been seeing for the last 2 or 4 years. The Senate will make some difference. But remember, the Republicans, even in the best case scenario, will have a relatively narrow majority. And again, they would require much more to actually change policy.
Anything to add or subtract to that, Igor?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think so. Republicans have been in the opposition since Obama was elected in one way or another. They're a great opposition party. Governing is a whole other matter, as they discover from time to time, and especially with characters like Ted Cruz in the Senate, who's happy to ruffle feathers on his side of the aisle. I think it's going to be difficult for them to really put forward a true governing agenda.
And back to you again, John Fortier. As you both have said, Obama's poll numbers over his handling of world affairs or going down. We'll see this new mission to help fight ISIL in Syria and Iraq will make a difference. But talk about the scenario for Obama in his second term. It's certainly not what he would have expected. He wanted to wind down the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and even in Afghanistan with the dispute over the presidential election, things are looking pretty grim. To what extent will all of this, do you think, affect his governing ability in the last couple of years and even his legacy?
Well, one pattern that second-term presidents tend to follow is they might start out their first term with a real legislative agenda and trying to get things through Congress, but they find in the second term that they don't have control of Congress, and they find it difficult to work at home, so they turn abroad. They are experienced. They want to leave a legacy. Interestingly, the president has had a much more positive experience in foreign policy in his first term, where his numbers were good, where things went well for him, where what he had said on the campaign seemed to be working out, and it's a much tougher sell now. Now, I suppose the other side of that is that it is an opportunity for the president to exercise leadership in a number of these difficult crises, and we don't know how they're going to turn out. So I don't think he would have wanted this situation. But he still, as a second-term president, is able to negotiate in the foreign policy realm without the permission of Congress always. Maybe they'll criticize him, but certainly he's got some ability to move and act. And I think that's primarily where he will be. I do think the other thing is he would like to have some sort of domestic legacy, but it's difficult. The parties don't agree on a lot of things. So could he get some bill, something like tax reform, through in the last couple of years with the help of Republicans? It is possible, and I think they'll make an attempt at that. But the number of things on the potential agenda for that are probably dwindling. And so he may have one last chance at something domestic, and then he'll spend a lot of time managing foreign policy as a president has to do.
Igor Volsky, how do you see President Obama's legacy or his last years in the second term? Certainly, as we said, perhaps not the scenario he would have liked. He wanted to act more aggressively on immigration reform. He did pass the health care reform. Now he is more embroiled in these foreign policy crises from Iraq, Syria to Ukraine, Russia. It must be frustrating for him. You're associated with the think tank with which he's closely associated.
Well, we certainly remember his tremendously ambitious second inaugural address where he talked about immigration reform and he talked about combating global warming and really laid out a real progressive vision of government. A lot of progressives were very excited about. But shortly thereafter, and this was after, he predicted that if he won a second election, that the Republican opposition would kind of simmer down a little bit because they would kind of get the message and they'd be able to work together. This great Obama belief that he's going to be able to work with Republicans and do what he believes is really good for the country. But it never happened. He was pulled into crisis after crisis in the Middle East, a region that he doesn't care for tremendously. He wanted to, as you all remember, pivot to Asia time and time again. That never really materialized because of where the global crisis was. And so now I think he's fairly frustrated. Many of the campaign promises he laid out initially, I think he met. Healthcare reform, as you point out, getting the country out of Iraq, although now we might be slowly dragged back into it. But I think his disappointment must be in the fact that his overall vision of governance that he laid out when he became a star in 2004, the Democratic Convention, in his books and in speech after speech, this idea that if he reaches across the aisle and just explains his point of view to people, they could come in the middle and solve something for the American people. I think it must be a great disappointment for him that that never truly happened.
Let me add two more factors. One, I do think on one side, the president is going to be constrained and unable to really work with Congress in most regards. But he has, as other presidents have, but certainly this president has emphasized in some ways the ways he could act by himself and act as, with executive action. I think you will see some of that, and that will be political. The parties will disagree. And some of that I think he will see as some of his legacy. I can't work with Congress, but at least I will make some progress in some areas.
Perhaps immigration reform, if they all
I think some of it, as Igor said, is likely to happen soon. But of course, you know, there will be opposition to that, both from Republicans in Congress and potentially from courts in certain areas. But, you know, a lot of this sounds pretty doom and gloom, and generally second terms aren't the greatest for presidents. So I think that following a pattern that other presidents have of real enthusiasm sometimes in their inaugural address, but certainly going into their second term and not really panning out. But, you know, one thing to watch is the economy. You know, our economy right now is not booming, but it is doing better. And I think the president can claim to have come in at a time of a low in the economy, and we're doing better. And if you look around the world to Europe, they're looking enviously at us that we are doing better than them. We don't know how that's going to turn. So while I think many of the factors are fairly negative for the president going forward, the economy can turn against you, but it can also turn forward, and there may be some signs that it's going that direction.
All right. Well, on that rather optimistic note, that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, Director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Igor Volsky, Managing Editor of ThinkProgress.org at the Center for American Progress. Gentlemen, as always, thank you so much for coming in, sharing your insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Kelvin Fowler. And I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.
Encounter on the Voice of America. Encounter on the Voice of America brought together advocates and opponents debating the critical issues of our time in a freewheeling, no-holds-barred discussion of fact and opinion. Your host was Carol Castiel. Join us again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.